Morning, good morning. What a beautiful day it is. We welcome you to the July the 7th, 13 County Board of Commissioners regular meeting for this month. I'd like to call on Commissioner Wesson for the invocation and pledge of allegiance.
Great, thank you, Jim. Pray with me, if you will. Heavenly Father and eternal God, Lord, we bow our heads in humble submission to your will. Father, just want to say thank you. Thank you for all of your many, many blessings to us, Father. It is an honor, Lord God, and a privilege to be able to serve the people of this great county. Lord God, I ask that you give us wisdom, that you give us a just mind and a willingness to listen and to do the very best that we can for the citizens of this county. And Lord God, we ask that everything we do might be pleasing in your sight. Father, I want to ask a special blessing for our citizens down in Miami area and to get through the tragedy of so many citizens apparently being lost. And be with those families, strengthen them, Lord God, and let them know that you're there and put your arms around them. And as we face this tropical depression that's apparently coming our way, Father, we ask that everyone in its path might be kept safe and that you just look out for us as you always have and bless us. Again, Father, we ask the special blessing for all the citizens of this county. And this board gives the opportunity to work together to improve the quality of life for folks in this county. We ask these blessings in your son Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
Join me in the pledge, if you would.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Commissioner Wesson. At this time, we will go into public comments. Are there any public comments from the audience this morning?
Yes, Chair.
Go ahead, Ms. Cartwright.
We have one from Lee Lawrence, retired DSS employee. Her comment is, will retirees be receiving the pandemic premium pay? I believe it should be prorated just like everyone else.
Thank you. Are there any others?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Are there any from the audience? Just as a reminder, we will have public comments at the end of our meeting. And so if there's anybody listening by way of Zoom, you can send those to Ms. Cartwright and we'll be glad to hear them. Thank you. At this time, we're going to have an update from Mr. Mitch Cooper, our Emergency Management Director on Tropical Storm
Elsa.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Stood before this board many a time, and usually it's bad news. We are getting ready to go through a tropical depression, which is currently a hurricane in Florida right now, and it just made landfall this morning about 8:30. Meteorologists are telling us it's going to weaken down to a tropical storm and then come over North Carolina. And our benefit is it started to move more towards the west. This was updated at 6 o'clock this morning and be updated again at 2 o'clock. And we actually have a conference call with Wakefield National Weather Service at 2 o'clock this afternoon. So we will be coming out with more updates. Currently right now, we're probably looking between 2 and 3 inches of rain. 5 in some localized areas where we could see some flash flooding, but no flooding event for Bertie County. We don't have any surge concerns on the sound for Bertie County at this time. And our wind, we're looking about 20 to 25 mile an hour gust. So as Commissioner Wesson mentioned earlier, if you got some light chairs on your back deck or a tent or anything like that, I'd probably bring those in today. We could start seeing the rain tomorrow. Late this evening, early tomorrow morning, and I think that most of this event will be after 5 o'clock, between 5 and 8 tomorrow evening, with the way the storm's running. So hopefully by Friday morning we get up, we might have a few clouds, and then we'll have a pretty weekend ahead of us with just a few storms in the forecast. But currently right now, Bertie County is not planning to open an ESC. We're not planning to open a shelter, but we are in a state of readiness. We have people at the warehouse right now checking all of our equipment. We've gone through all of our supplies and our commodities. So if something does happen, after our initial response with emergency responders, we can be set up within a matter of hours if we need to be. We're very proud of having those assets and those commodities in place now. And we've worked hard to get there, so we can set up fairly quickly. So nobody needs to, you know, get too worried that we're not going to be able to respond. We have worked to be able to stand on our own for at least 72 hours without any state assistance. So we will be there. Do y'all have any questions for me or concerns based on what this current track is?
Just to let the folks know, I mean, potential for tornadoes is there.
There's still the potential for tornadoes, especially on the right side of the storm. And we are on the right side of the storm, but our benefit right now is that track keeps moving west. So the further we can get away from the eye on the right side of the storm, the better we are. And right now, our probabilities keep going down. It'll be more towards the central part of the state.
One of our citizens, they have a home here and they have a home in Florida in Fort Myers. He was saying the backside of the storm was worse for them. So I'm not sure if that's going to be the case for us or not. But
well, as long as they keep updating that track going to the west, I feel more comfortable every minute that happens. So, but I feel that we're prepared. The board should know that we still have 8 campers still under contract from the last tornado. We have secured a place for all of those residents to be somewhere and out of a camper. By contract, we have to supply that as long as they're under our contract. So that's been already secured, and we stand ready, and we're going to continue to prepare for the rest of the today, and then tomorrow we'll be ready on set go if needed. Okay. So.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you.
Thanks for the update.
Y'all have a good meeting.
Thank you for the update. Thank you. Moving on to reports and appointments, we have a representative from the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina. Miss Sarah Bernard, I need to put some glasses on. I can't see. Miss Sarah Bernard, are you there, ma'am?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. Am I able to share my screen? Oh, somebody's doing that for me.
Are you there, Miss Sarah?
I'm there. Am I able to share now? No, I'm not. I was hoping to be able to bring up my PowerPoint presentation.
Ms. Cartwright, can you give her the ability to share?
Yes, Shelly, working on it now.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Are we going to be able to bring up my PowerPoint or no?
Ms. Bernard, our clerk is working on giving you access to
But
I do have, this is one, I do have the PowerPoint for the PDF that you sent me. So either way, we'll make it work.
Oh, I think I can bring it up now. Okay, there we go. Good morning, everyone. I'm Sarah Bernard. I am the existing industry expansions manager for the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina. I work in the Northeast Prosperity Zone, which includes Burtee County. I help companies, especially manufacturers, when they are in growth mode. And I am the project manager for Project Sparkle. I act as the agent between the company, the county, and the North Carolina Department of Commerce. And Project Sparkle tentatively will create over 100 new jobs and invest about $5 million in Bertie County. So let me tell you a little bit about Bertie County from the Department of Commerce's perspective. The last project announcement was 5 years ago. That was Baker's Southern Traditions. They announced they were creating 10 new jobs and investing about $250,000 into the company. As you all probably know, Bertie County is a tier one county. That is a scale from 1 to 3 of how the state ranks the different counties in terms of economic distress. And Bertie County is the 13th most economically distressed county in the state. The average private sector wage for Bertie County for 2021, that's annually, is $32,276, that's about $16 per hour. And Project Sparkle must meet or exceed this wage. So North Carolina has programs in place to support each stage of a company's development. And these are our four main categories of incentives. Eligibility and amounts can vary depending on region, project type, and project size. Project Sparkle could be eligible for all of these. And these are some examples of North Carolina's incentive programs that can assist a company with the development or expansion process. On the left are the public infrastructure and transportation programs. North Carolina offers many different programs to fund public infrastructure development, including the Community Development Block Grant Economic Development Program, the Utility Account, the Rural Division's Economic Infrastructure Program, NCDOT's Rail Industrial Access Program, the North Carolina Railroad Company's NCRR Invest Program, and the Department of Commerce's Joint Economic Development Program with DOT, that is for road improvements. And then there are Golden Leaf Foundation grants that can be used to fund company announcements. On the right-hand side are the funding for capital investments, and I'm gonna skip over JDIG and 1NC and go to the bottom two first. Those are the state's building reuse programs. North Carolina offers two different programs to provide grants to renovate and upfit vacant industrial and commercial buildings, including the Community Development Block Grant Building Reuse Program and the Rural Division's Building Reuse Program. A CDBG building reuse grant award can be made up to $750,000 per local government. The local government must provide at least $1 for every dollar provided by the CDBG building reuse. And matching funds can come from the building owner or the project company. So typically there's a 50-50 match between the CDBG funds and the company. The Rural Division's building reuse program, the award can be up to $500,000 per local government, and the local government must contribute at least 5% of the total eligible expenditures. The cash match must come from the local government resources and may not be derived from other state or federal grant funds. So in Project Sparkle's case, if the company receives a $500,000 maximum award, Bertie County's responsibility would be $25,000. That's the 5% match. So these are the state's two flagship discretionary incentives. JDIG and 1NC are not typically co-awarded for the same project. It's either or. And JDIG is the Job Development Investment Grant. It is what Apple is receiving in RTP for creating 3,000 new jobs there. But the JDIG program is used for many projects that are much smaller than that. JDIG is a performance-based discretionary incentive program that provides cash grants to new and expanding businesses to help offset the cost of locating or expanding a business facility in the state. Companies can qualify for a JDIG based on the project location, the number of jobs, and the average wage. The grant amount is based on a percentage of the personal income tax withholdings associated with the new jobs. Grant funds are disbursed annually for up to 12 years to approve companies following the satisfactory performance criteria that have been set by the grant agreements. The project must be competitive with locations outside North Carolina and remain competitive until the grant is formally awarded. And a company can use JDIG funds for any purpose. The rule of thumb for a tier one county, at least 100 jobs must be created. So Project Sparkle may qualify for a JDIG. There's no match requirement by the local government for a project locating in a tier one county. The One North Carolina Fund, also known as 1NC, is a discretionary cash grant program that allows Governor Cooper to respond quickly to competitive job creation projects. Awards are based on the number of jobs created, the investment level, project location, and the economic impact of the project. Like the JDIG, the project must be competitive with locations outside North Carolina and remain competitive until the grant is formally awarded. Awards may be used for improvements such as installation or purchase of equipment, structural repairs and renovations, and construction or improvements to utility lines and associated equipment. The rule of thumb for a tier one county, at least 20 new jobs must be created. And the 1NC does require a local match. In a tier one county, the local government must provide no less than $1 for every $3 provided by the state. So for instance, if the company receives a $75,000 1NC grant from the state, Bertie County would have to kick in $25,000. There's some other tax incentives to reduce operating costs. There's a sales tax exemption on manufacturing machinery and equipment. And this includes parts and accessories, as well as specialized equipment for loading or processing. That's all exempt from sales and use tax. In North Carolina, the retail sales, as well as the use, storage, or consumption of electricity, fuel, and piped natural gas sold to a manufacturer are exempt from sales and use tax for use in a manufacturing operation. And then, as you probably know, North Carolina and its local governments do not levy a property tax on inventories. Inventories owned by contractors, manufacturers, retailers, wholesalers, any merchants like that, they're all excluded from property tax. And finally, we have workforce development and training programs that are available to companies that are locating in the state. These are offered by the community college system. The customized training program provides customized training assistance in support of full-time production and direct customer service positions. Resources provided may support training assessment, instructional design and costs, and training delivery for the personnel involved. So in Project Sparkle's case, Martin Community College would be the provider, and the community college and NC Works can also assist with recruiting, screening, and testing services for the new employees. So that, in a nutshell, are some of the incentives that Project Sparkle could be eligible for. I am not going to speculate as to which ones the Department of Commerce may award the company, but I'd be happy to answer any questions that anyone may have if you have anything that you'd like to ask about Project Sparkle that I'm at liberty to say.
Are there any questions?
Yes, I do have one question. Thank you, Ms. Barnhart. This is Commissioner Wesson. We're really excited about the possibility of Project Sparkle here in the county. And so this presentation has been very helpful to us. But great. I have another question that might be slightly outside of your scope, but I'm going to ask it anyway, see if you can kind of direct it. When you look back at Bertie County over the last 9 months, at least through May, we have had the lowest unemployment in the state of North Carolina, primarily because most of our workers are essential workers. So we weren't really affected because we don't have a lot of retail and that kind of thing during the pandemic. But the problem for us is we know that when you look at people who work in this county and don't live in this county, we have the largest percentage of those people than any other county in this region, because we do not have adequate housing for those people, especially middle income housing. We have some senior, you know, resident housing, some low income, but middle income working class folks don't live here in great numbers because we don't have the housing for them, even though they work here. We found it very difficult finding sources for middle income housing in the state. Can you offer any assistance, direction, or whatever in terms of how it's one of our biggest issues right here? We're a declining population like most of the counties in this region, but our job growth has been phenomenal. We just can't house folks here.
Right. Yes, thank you for that. You know, workforce housing is a really big issue. A lot of counties are having that problem. I have a friend or a colleague in economic development in Northampton County. He has to live in Roper because he couldn't find anywhere to live in Northampton County. I know it's a big issue on Dare County with the tourism businesses that need workers and they're seasonal, and they need somewhere to live. Workforce housing really is not my area. I do think that in Governor Cooper's proposed budget for the next round of American Rescue Plan funding, I believe he has workforce housing as a line item in that budget. So we'll just have to see, you know, what happens with that. But yes, we are aware that that is an issue, and it could be something that affects Project Sparkle's ability to hire at the rate they want to once they've announced.
Great, thank you. Thank you very much.
Ms. Sarah, the employment profile that they've submitted is quite impressive with the numbers and the salaries. So I'm certainly hoping that your agency can assist them in any way and make it as cost effective for the county as possible.
Right.
We are, as a reminder, we are a tier one county and could really use these jobs, even though we won't be able to house them, we really could use the jobs.
Right, right. That employment profile that you have is a draft. The project has not been submitted to the Department of Commerce yet. I am waiting for the plant manager to get me the construction estimates before we can apply for something like the building reuse program to get a match on renovation work. I need construction estimates from a third party. So I am trying to push that with the plant manager. He was on vacation last week, but that's really the only piece that's holding the project up from going before the Department of Commerce for a decision.
Some of the commissioners met with him and on site, and he was very impressive, and what he has in store for the facility is going to be a huge bonus to that area in Orlando. Right. For those that are listening or those in the audience that don't know what Project Sparkle is, okay.
We're not, okay, before you go any further, we're not allowed to say the company's name. We're not allowed to say where they're located. We can only talk about what I said previously about job numbers and investment. And that's all it, that's all at a draft right now.
Yes, Steve is in the room and he said, be careful. So yes. Thank you. Yes, I will not go any further, but it is going to be a great thing for Bertie County. So thank you.
Right. And just, I just want to reiterate this project really needs to remain confidential. I can't have anybody, especially in public, announcing the company's name, because that can jeopardize all of the grant money that the company could receive. Unfortunately, the EDPNC has seen that happen more than once, where it got leaked into the press what was going on. And once that happens, you know, everything's done. We can't go any further. So I know it's strange, and you want to, you're excited and you want to tell the world, but we really have to keep it quiet until the governor or the Department of Commerce makes an announcement.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for all you do.
You're welcome.
You have a great day.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us.
Yep. You're welcome.
I'm going to call on Mr. Steve Biggs, our economic developer, to add any comments that he may have.
What? I think the only thing that Sarah did mention, and I jotted this down when she was talking about it, would be part of the workforce development would come through Martin Community. That area is actually served by Roanoke Chowan, so it would actually come through that. But everything else that she mentioned, again, it's the same thing that you hope that you get to do one day. The JDIGS, the 1NC, the building reuse. And one other thing, we have had one other building reuse since Baker Peanut, which was Abram's Barbecue, but in the end, they did not, they received the grant, but they did not utilize it. So we have had one more with building reuse. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So one other comment that she made that Commissioner Weston and I poked our ears up at, so it doesn't seem like it was that long ago that we were the sixth county. And I think when I first came on board on this commission, on this board of commissioners, we were at number three. And then we went to six, but now we're at the 13th most distressed county. So that may sound horrible, but to us, it sounds great. We're moving up. So we're improving as a county.
That's a great point, Chairman, because I remember when I came on 8 years ago, we were one from the bottom, and we've moved up steady. And when the new census data really comes up, we're expected to move up even further. But to say that we've moved up, 12 places in this short of time, I don't know another county in the state of North Carolina can say that. So, and to have the lowest unemployment during a pandemic, big deal. So we're moving in the right direction.
That's right. things are improving. All right, so next on the agenda is the Berkshire County Library and North Carolina Corporate Extension Facility wrap-up by Amber or Danny. And I know I saw Danny up there. I'm not sure if Amber's with us or not.
Good morning. Yeah, this is Danny. The Amber is out on vacation right now. So you got me.
All right. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us. We appreciate it. As we all know, we had the ribbon cutting last month, and that was a huge success from our standpoint. It was lovely to be there. You guys did a wonderful job putting that together. At this point, the project is almost complete. We are in the process of getting those last few remaining items checked off the contractor's list. We should have most everything completed by the end of this month. We have some more material delays. I'm sure, as you've heard in the news, materials have become significantly hard to come by lately. Prices have shot up all over the place. So we already have prices on everything, so that's not a concern for us. But we are getting caught up by some of the material delays. So we're doing, the contractor is doing everything that they can to be at the front of the line. But we are seeing, I think the biggest thing that we will be waiting on probably until the middle of August is some additional stone for the outside of the building. And that's one of the items that we were waiting for the very end to try and make the best use of that Golden Leaf funds as possible. So we pulled the trigger on that. I think it was last month we processed that final change order. And now we are just waiting for the materials to arrive. But it's not going to affect the function of the building. Everything is fully operational. It's just going to, you know, make maintenance a little easier and, you know, beautify the outside of the building with some additional plantings and some stone. So because of that, we are going to hold on to the last payment application until then, because we don't want to process that until the work is complete, inspected, and accepted by everybody. So we're looking at a contract completion, like fully wrapping up Golden Leaf funds and all of the construction contract and the design contract, probably in September would be my guess, from a paperwork standpoint. And then you, from that point, we have a year of a contractor warranty. That started on the date of substantial completion. So we will be available for, and the contractor for, you know, some things just don't work out perfectly. You know, you always find things that aren't quite right or something isn't operating perfectly as you kind of get into your new space and the new building. And so we're on call for the next year to make sure we can address any of those issues. And then probably in April of next year, we'll do a walkthrough with all the users of the building and anybody else who'd like to attend to just walk through everything and what we call as a warranty walk. So if there are any remaining things that need to be addressed by the contractor before that warranty period expires, that it is taken care of. And other than that, we're just kind of waiting and available for questions and anything that could come up for with the new space.
Thank you. We had a wonderful ribbon cutting out there.
Yeah. A
couple weeks ago, I guess, time flies. But I did notice that the parking lot is had some places in it that needs to be corrected before someone gets hurt.
We did. Yep. We were on site. I think it was last week. I'm pretty sure it was last week with Juan. And we looked at that and took photos. The contractor is also aware of that, and he is talking with his paving contractor to get that addressed.
Okay. Thank you. The building is absolutely gorgeous, and y'all have done a great job.
You guys were inspiring us to do well. So we appreciate all of your input. It was a collaborative process with everybody. So it was a wonderful, wonderful process. So we thank you for the opportunity.
Has anybody got any questions? Okay. Thank you for joining us today.
No problem. I hope I talk to you again soon.
All right. So next on the agenda is the 2021 municipal election plans by Ms. Sheila Holloman, which is our board of directors, board of elections director.
Good morning, commissioners. County Manager and the citizens of Berkeley County. I'm here today to just explain a few things about the municipal elections. Municipal elections are held in odd number of years, and we have 8 towns where the voters will be allowed to vote in the municipal election. They are Askeyville, Arlanda, Corain, Lewiston, Woodville, Kelford, Powellsville, Roxville, and Windsor. These are nonpartisan contests, so the candidate's party will not appear on the ballot. Because of their election method, Windsor and Powellsville may have a primary election in October. And the reason a primary is held is if you have 2 or more candidates for a single office, or if there's a greater number than twice the number of seats in a group election. So that means like if there were 4 seats available for the county commissioner and you had 7 people to apply, you would have to have a primary to weed out those. And the top four vote getters would go on to the November election. The other towns will vote in November the 5th. The deadline to register for this election is October the 8th. The town of Windsor is the only town that will be participating in early voting. And early voting begins October the 14th through Saturday, October the 20th. The hours for early voting haven't been determined yet, but it's normally just normal business hours. The filing period actually began last Friday, the 2nd. We actually have 2 filing periods. For the towns that don't vote by district, they began last Friday and it will go through the 16th. The town of Lewiston's filing will begin on July the 26th and run through August the 13th because they vote by districts. And a person who wants to file for candidacy, they have to be at least 21 years of age, live in that municipality. And if, like I said, if they live in Lewiston, they have to live in the district that they want to run for. They come to the Board of Elections office during our normal business hours, which is 8:30 to 5. And the filing fee is $5, which hasn't changed over the years. Every candidate has to open a committee. You don't have to have a certain number of people on the committee. It can just be the candidate, but each committee has to have a treasurer. And each treasurer has to take treasurer's training class at least 3 months after they are appointed to treasurer. And that happens every 4 years. So if anyone has taken it within the last 4 years, they won't need to take the treasurer's training class. And the candidates who have already filed, each day, it's actually updated on the state board website. So if you wanted to find out who had actually filed for candidacy, you can go to the state website and look under results and data. And it's listed by the counties. And like I said, those who are candidates for Windsor and Powellsville, theirs will be listed in the October, just in case we have to have a primary. But if we don't, then their names would be moved over to November. That's basically all I have about elections. You actually, I think, have a list of the seats that are available in each of the towns. Those are for commissioner and the mayors. I want to thank my board, the commissioners, State Harbor Grant, and county manager and the finance director. Come November, the voters will be using upgraded voting equipment. There won't be too much of a difference that the voter will notice, but on the back end, it's an upgrade and it will help us tremendously. Also on July the 20th at noon, our board members will be sworn in for a 2-year period. We have five members on our board. We have two Democrats, James Lee and Anthony Ward, two Republicans, Michael Fields Sr. and Timothy Davis, and our chairperson is appointed by the governor. We're still waiting for him to make that appointment.
What time is the swearing in?
At noon on the 20th. Okay.
Your presentation is timely. I've already had one phone call.
Okay.
So hopefully they were able to contact you. I gave them your...
Yeah, we've had a couple of phone calls inquiring. All right, thank you.
Thank you so much. Before we get into board appointments and the consent agenda, I need to do a roll call. You would think after a year of doing this, we'd be used to it. But so as I call your name, commissioners, if you would just say present or online, and I don't believe we have anybody online, but Commissioner Atkins.
Present.
Commissioner Wesson.
Present.
Commissioner Robertson.
Present.
I'm Tammy Lee. I'm present. Commissioner Trent, have you joined us by way of Zoom? Don't believe he has. Okay. Thank you. So next on the agenda is board appointments. We have a vacancy coming up on the ABC board, and Mr. Michael Freeman has expressed his wishes to continue in that capacity. Are there any comments? If not,
I'll make the motion that we accept Mr. Mike Freeman to continue his service, his great service on the ABC board.
Second that.
Thank you. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Congratulations, Mr. Freeman. Thank you, and continue to do great work. Moving on to the consent agenda, we have the registered deeds report and the tax release journal that I'm going to take those two items first. I'll take a motion to approve.
So moved, Madam Chair, that we accept the registered deeds report and the tax release journal June 21 report.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. So approve the home and community care block grant for older adults for the 21-22. Before we vote on this, has the attorney had a chance to look over this contract?
Yes.
Yes. And everything's good?
Yes.
All right.
Madam Chairman, move to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Approved contractual agreement between Berkeley County Council on Aging and C&J's non-emergency medical transport for 21-22 year. Has the attorneys had a chance to look over this contract?
Yes, ma'am.
Is everything good?
Yes, we made a draft and made a number of changes. We took out a section that allowed the C&Js to increase their pay basically unilaterally if their expenses went up without any sort of notification to the county or any chance. So anyway, they agreed to take that out, and we added some other typical provisions in there that are typical to contracts that we do for the county. So yes, ma'am, we've got it in a form that we think is best.
All right. What was
the final cost of the contract? Final cost of our transport?
Let's see. Might need help with one on that. It was a 25.
Yeah. That's one way trip.
Right.
Yeah.
And 50 for a round.
Yeah. Any other questions?
I know there were some questions raised at last meeting. Have all those been satisfied?
Yes, but is Vanita online? Can you share with the board and everyone in attendance today what you what your discussions were with the other companies. I think the board had asked us to, had asked you to reach out to the other companies, transport companies in the area to see if they were able to provide a similar service.
Yes. I actually called the Chamber of Commerce to get all the ambulance services over in the county. And I got that and I called each one of them to ask what they want to to do a bid, but I asked them, could they provide services for this regular people, not stretcher bound or wheelchair bound, and they couldn't. They only do like the stretcher or the wheelchair only. But we need services for everybody, not just those two. We don't even do stretcher anyway, but we just do the regular people and wheelchair. And most, they said they couldn't, they could not provide that. So we couldn't do anything with them. You know, we had one that was kind of I said she might could do something, but then when she asked me, she asked me, so I told her, she asked me how much were they charging us, and I said $25. She said, how in the world they do that for $25? So she said, no, we can't do that. You know, she said, we can't go low that low. So, but that's the only one that had any interest in it at all, was one, I think it was White Oak. That was it. Rest of them said they didn't even provide that kind of service at all. Okay. And she could only provide us, if she could do it, she only could provide us one vehicle. And that, you know, and you, that means only one person could go. If you had two people go that day, you couldn't go maybe, you know, especially if the pump was about the same time.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
So I'll take a motion to approve if no more questions.
Move to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, so number five, approve resolution approving the MOA between the state of North Carolina and local governments on the proceeds relating to the settlement of the opioid litigation. Jonathan?
Yes, ma'am.
Is this, are you comfortable with us signing this resolution?
Well, let me say it's a good resolution. The fact that it gives local governments 85% of the proceeds is fantastic. I checked with our North Carolina counsel that assisted us in filing our multi-district litigation case in federal court. They're the ones that had told us to pause or hold off signing it. I guess let me go ahead and say it's not a simple answer. We're getting one opinion from our litigation attorneys, state and national, and then we're getting another opinion from our North Carolina administrator, NCACC folks. And I did a fair amount of calling around yesterday. So if you'll bear with me, I'll tell you what I've gathered, and we'll see if we can make a fully informed decision. Because that's all I think we need to do. And we're not, and I'll say too, that neither side is telling us, hey, you've got to do this right now, or you've got to not do this right now. They're both pretty flexible in what they're telling us. We're not under a gun right this very second. The further we go, the closer we need to act. So let me just,
what is that?
The reader's date. That day, October. Okay. I talked to Kevin Leonard and who, of course, you know, Kevin Leonard, and then Gordon Watkins, Forsyth County attorney yesterday, who was on the 5-5-5 committee, who came up with the memorandum of agreement, the MOA. And so, yeah, I went through a series of calls, but anyway, regardless of how I got there. Let me say, first of all, from Kevin Leonard and the 5-5-5 folks, because he's one of the five, Gordon Watkins is one of the five attorneys that were on that council, county attorney. And his Forsyth County has already signed it. And I understand there are 35 counties in the state that have signed the MOA. Not all of those counties are in the litigation, though. So they don't all necessarily have the same position we've got in terms of having attorneys hired. So the big question is, we've signed a contingency fee agreement with national counsel. So I want to get that's a fact that Ron pointed out that I want to be sure that I go on record agreeing with.
Our agreement is only with the Q4, which is the national attorneys. And in our contingency fee agreement, it says that there will be other participating firms. Lists probably 7 or 8 of them, and 2 or 3 of them are from North Carolina. And they've done just what that agreement says. They've participated, they've contacted us. I've gone to Jake Daniel and asked him questions, and I felt more comfortable asking a North Carolina attorney that's involved in this quick questions and get quick responses than I do the National Council. So just starting with them real quick, they're saying, yeah, let's stay in the pause for right now. And the reason they're saying that, and I'm not going to read from this, but I'll paraphrase this email I got from Jake Daniel yesterday. So they're still working with Swain Wood in the North Carolina Attorney General's office, and trying to get see if the AG's office can support an attorney's fee provision to be included in the MOA. But nothing's been concretely decided. The bottom line, he says, is that until we see the details in terms of the anticipated roughly $26 billion national settlement with Cardinal Health, AmerisourceBergen, McKesson, all them, we can't really give any sound advice as to our county clients adopting an agreement that, in our opinion, is a bit premature. No one knows exactly what's going to be contained in the final term sheet for the anticipated national settlement. So until we see those details, we really can't advise on an agreement that predicates its terms on some assumptions. Now, I understand the purpose of the MOA, which has been thoroughly negotiated and thoroughly discussed over a period of time, is to sort of go ahead and present a united front to the opioid distributors and manufacturers to say, hey, you know, you can seriously consider negotiations with us, states like North Carolina, because we've already got it all figured out. We already figured out how we're going to distribute these funds once we get them. And that's good. I think that gives gives the defendants in these opioid cases more a better feeling about going ahead and entering into settlement discussion. But at the same time, the attorney's fee provision concern is, even though our attorney's fee agreement is with just the National Council, and then the National Council then takes care of the other firms that are under it, they've got their own agreements. The thing is that we just don't know yet what the final big settlement agreement is going to be and whether it's going to have an attorney's fee fund. Because the overall attorneys in this that represent us, among all the other folks in the country that are plaintiffs, are saying they're willing to reduce their typically 25% down to something much less than that, and take their funds from an attorney fee fund. But again, the offer hasn't been made yet, so that fund is not set up and available. So the concern is that if that fund is not available, then they're going to be looking at folks like Berkeley County, Forsyth County. They're going to say, okay, we, you know, if it's a settlement and we receive the funds, they're going to say, well, we want our 25%. They're entitled to do that, even though they've said up and down, left and right, they're probably not going to take a full 25%. The roughly right now, if it's a $26 billion settlement, they're agreeing to take, if there may be about a 2% attorney fund, $2 billion attorney fund, which might be, you know, 8 or 9 or 10% fees instead of 25% fees. But they're saying that if that doesn't work out in a way that's settled out and agreed in writing, then they may have to, you know, may have to follow through on the agreement they made with us and ask for the 25%. Well, if the terms of the final agreement don't provide for the payment of attorney's fees, then if we've already signed an MOA that already says, here's how we're going to divide this money out, and it doesn't say anything about how attorney's fees are going to get paid, then what Jake Daniel is saying is that there is a small risk that the county's going to have to come up with the attorney's fees in some other way. Now, the agreement we have, the contingency of the agreement, actually does say that the county is not, as far as attorney's fees, the money's going to has to come from the award the county gets. It says specifically that we don't have to get it from raising taxes. We don't have to get it from somewhere else in the county general fund, it says that it will come from those proceeds. I guess what they're saying is that even though our agreement says that, if the money that comes in doesn't provide for paying attorney's fees in that way, then the county could be in a dilemma. You know, we've got this award, but at the same time, we've got an obligation to pay 25% of it to these attorneys. And there may not be some attorney's fee block of money that's in the agreement set aside to pay the attorneys. So having said all that, I understand, I talked to Kevin Leonard and I understand his position. He feels like the national attorneys are in a way sort of just trying to protect the local, more local attorneys. And maybe there's some truth to that. You know, the belief that maybe the local attorneys haven't really done as much as the national attorneys, and maybe what's it our job to protect them? I don't think this is necessarily a matter of, I mean, our fee agreement is with the national attorneys, and the uncertainty of what's going to be in that final settlement agreement. I can see that if we go ahead and sign an MOA and it doesn't provide in any way that it can be used to pay attorney's fees, there is a slight risk. So our national attorneys and state attorneys that filed this case for us are saying, if the county commissioners decide they want to go ahead with MOA, we're not going to stop them. We're not going to tell them absolutely not, you can't do that, because you certainly can. And again, it's an excellent allocation and it sets things out really nicely. It's just those minor terms. And so they're still asking us to pause and to hold off just a little longer. And talking to Gordon Watkins, who was on the 5-5 committee, he said that one of the benefits of the MOA, once it is signed, is that it also talks about how the bankruptcy funds from the Purdue Pharma case will be distributed. So it provides an avenue for that as well. And he and Kevin are saying, well, you know, here's a great 85% MOA. And if this goes far enough, and I'm talking about months and months and months, and it still doesn't get passed or still doesn't get handled, then you kick down to a default, which is much less than 85%. So I will say again, I feel like no matter what we do, if we stay on the pause for the MOA, we definitely need to keep our ear to the ground and not go past what Gordon said. They're saying an October 1 deadline to sign or not sign the MOA, because of the bankruptcy. That allocation, there's going to be some action done in the bankruptcy by November or December. I don't want to play brinksmanship here. I do want to be careful. It's not my money. It's not your money. It's the people's money. So I definitely don't want to risk that 85%. But at the same time, the very people that have assisted us and got us into this litigation to get this, put us in a good position to get it, are telling us still to hold off until they can talk to the AG's office a little further. So I guess my advice is, and it's your decision. It's your decision to weigh the risk. I'm telling you, I'm passing on to you that our national counsel said that there is a risk that there'll be uncertainty in, if we sign the MOA right now, uncertainty in whether we can use that money to pay attorney's fees. Let's give them a little more time to try to work this out.
Go ahead, Commissioner Watson.
And Jonathan, I hear you very well, and I appreciate what you're saying. Let me say just to be clarity, you know, I sit on the board of directors of the association. Okay, so we've had a lot of discussion. And I've also talked with many of the folks in the 555 committee. And I think the majority of them are saying that we should sign, the vast majority. And here's the reason. Whether October is the right date or not, we run the risk of losing 85% of whatever the settlement is. Because if we don't show, in fact, the agreement that was set with the DOJ said, if the association cannot show the preponderance of counties in the state so that the association can speak for all 100 counties, then there is no deal. And the state, not just the other litigants, but the state can say, oh no, we want way more than 15%. We may want the 85%. Golden Leaf, anybody remember Golden Leaf? And the state could say, we want that larger percent of counties, we'll only give you the 15%. And then who knows what the counties will get. I mean, the whole reason for having this negotiation was to make sure that the counties were well positioned, because we're the ones who are gonna have to deal with the opioid crisis at the local level. And this agreement represents actually more than 85% to us. That's the minimum, because the other 15% that the state is gonna get, some of that, probably at least 5%, is also gonna be awarded to counties and municipalities. So what we're putting at risk here could be more than that. So I understand that we have an out date. We cannot afford to miss that date if a settlement does not happen. And the other point is that we only have one agreement with legal, and that is at the national level. And my understanding of that agreement is that the lawyers will get the top $2 billion off the top of a settlement. $2 billion is a lot of money, right? And so my understanding is, my question is, why isn't the negotiation between other lawyers who are working with the national, between them and the national, around that $2 billion, as opposed to wanting to hold up the MOU, which puts the counties in great position to say, we support this 85% distribution. I'm not sure that I understand why that negotiation should be with the counties when we already have an agreement with the national around that $2 billion. So I respect what you're saying. Whether it's now or whether it's later, if we cannot afford to miss this date, because if we do not show the preponderance of the counties in North Carolina behind this, the whole deal that we put with DOJ and the state goes out the window and has to be totally renegotiated.
Right.
And we could get a whole lot. I mean, nobody's even talking about getting anywhere near the kind of money we're talking about here, none of the other states.
Right.
So I wouldn't want to see us risk that.
Right. Yeah, right. Well, there you go. That's the word risk. Risk, I guess you've got to weigh the risk on both sides. And if commissioners feel like the risk of losing the 85% is greater than the risk of being told in a national settlement that there's no $2 billion attorney's fee fund, the counties just when they get their money, they just gotta pay up.
Doesn't that $2 billion agreement already is in place?
Well, Kevin Leonard said that there's nothing firmly in place right now. I'm looking at my notes from talking to him yesterday.
Around the top national law, with the national firms? My understanding of the agreement is within that's nothing below that between the national firms and others who have joined it. That's
right.
What's not in place. The national firms are guaranteed their $2 billion, but those below them there's no share broken out with the other lawyers who have joined it.
Kevin said he's got his fingers on the pulse pretty closely, and he's fairly sure, not 100% because it hasn't been put in writing, but he's fairly sure there will be a $2 billion national fee fund for the attorneys. I think it's expected. And, you know, if we're weighing risk and we're weighing potential or possibilities, then, I mean, I would weigh that pretty heavily. If he feels like that's what it's gonna be, it's probably gonna be that.
They have is a MOU with the attorneys at the national level, which is what we're doing.
Yeah, with the
MOU,
right?
So
yeah.
The attorneys at the national level felt the need to require an MOU, which they got.
Right.
But for some reason, we should be holding off on an MOU at our level to protect the county.
Right.
I'm not sure that makes a lot of sense. But, as long as we don't miss the October date, I'm good.
So if we continue the pause, as long as we meet that October 1st deadline, is there any risk of not making the vote today?
Well, I can't say that for 100% either.
No, anything could be new. DOJ could back out. State could back out. Anybody could back out.
Yeah, yeah.
The longer we wait, the more risk there is. And we should be concerned. I understand protecting the lawyers. Don't get me wrong, right?
Yeah.
But they have an MOU, is my understanding, at the national level.
Right.
Our job as county commissioners ought to be protecting the counties and the citizens in the county.
Right, right.
That should be our first priority, right? Because our represent, you know, our attorney's firm working for us is going to get covered no matter what. That's not the issue.
Right.
So right. It's not an issue about our attorneys.
Mr. Long, do you have an opinion?
I don't. After hearing all that, I understand both sides. And again, as Attorney Huddleston put it, it's just a matter of weighing the risk on both sides. So it's hard. There are risks on both sides, as Commissioner Weston and Attorney Huddleston stated.
I mean, if you go with what Kevin Leonard believes is going to be the case, which is there'll be a $2 billion fee fund for the attorneys, that'll take care of our 25% obligation with the National Council. Again, we're not worried about the state council or local. Worry about national. That's who our agreement's with. If he's fairly certain that's going to be there, and since we really don't, the October 1 deadline is not a stated deadline. Initially, they were talking about, Gordon Watkins said they were talking about November or December, and some wanted the deadline now. Some wanted to say, well, no, we can give people more time. And so they sort of, the committees, I think, basically just said, well, how about October, you know, how about roughly in the October 1 range? But like Ron said, if there's a possibility that, there is always a possibility that in September, something happens and
I do have one question, John. Since this is a memorandum of understanding, right?
Right.
What does that lock us into? It's not a contractual agreement, is it?
Well, you got to be careful about it. It's got to work. Well, I think it's MOA.
It's MOA.
And so,
Memorandum of Agreement.
So, I still think even if it was called Memorandum of Understanding, when a set of parties sign a document and say, this is how we're going to do it, it does essentially amount to an agreement at that point.
I mean, for the county?
Got some more flexibility.
Because the association can't sign an agreement to represent all 100 unless they have the preponderance of the 100 counties that signed the MOA.
Right.
And I thought that was where we were. You know, the association's concerned with not being able to represent the counties unless they have the preponderance of counties, which I don't know what preponderance is. Is that 51 of 50 or and out of 100? The word that we've been given is preponderance, right?
Right.
That's what DOJ is going to require for the association to represent all of the counties.
Right.
So that's why the county is trying to get that leverage to be able to say, this is what the majority of our counties want, this 85%. And if we don't have that, then they can't speak for it. And there is no agreement. So that's what is at risk.
Right.
And anybody could back out at any time. I mean, my more concern, quite frankly, is with the state.
Right.
For those of you who've been around a while, remember what happened with Golden Leaf? This is not the organization Golden Leaf. But the reason that money did not go directly to counties, right? Even though that was attempted to be negotiated, is because of a situation similar to this. Counties didn't get their wishes. And now we have to go to one organization, you know, that doesn't distribute money equally, right? Not no fault of their own. Don't get me wrong, Golden Leaf. I love
Golden Leaf's been mighty good to Burton County.
I love you. But you know, it doesn't work that way, right? We have to go there and make our case as opposed to getting our fair share of dollars that were in that settlement. And nobody wants that again. I don't think anybody wants. I don't even think Golden Leaf wants that, right?
So right. Well, locking into that, the attractiveness of locking into that may be the commissioner's decision to say, well, that's the risk of losing that is greater than the off chance that there won't be an attorney's fee fund. There'll be some sort of terminology in the final settlement that doesn't allow the payment of attorney's fees.
Since I was kind of dissenting opinion, and not really dissenting, but just that I would say recommend that we ask Jonathan to continue to monitor the case with the understanding that at some point we do not want to be
held up or put in, you know, a difficult situation of not being able to get a significant share of what has been proposed.
Right. So would you like to make that a motion?
Well, I don't know if we need to. I mean, right now, I mean, John is representing us. He's advising us. Do we need that in a motion? Or do you?
I don't think so. He's saying if we're just going to ask him to keep monitoring and not approve
we're
it right
gonna
now.
We're going to continue on pause.
No. Yeah. But again, I think the number is so we're clear on this. The number a couple of weeks ago was 38. Now I think they're up almost 50 of the counties if now signed.
Okay.
And it's not just counties. Counties and municipalities. Because there are about 15 municipalities in that number, too, that get a direct grant, like Mecklenburg, Wake, and places like that. They get a direct grant as well as counties. So it's 100 counties plus, I think it's 15 municipalities in there too. So. Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're gonna continue on pause and you're not gonna let us go past any date that they may give you, October 1 being that target time.
Right. Yeah.
We can put it back on the agenda for our next meeting and just continue with having it on the agenda until.
And negotiations are ongoing. I mean, daily, trying to reach some kind of agreement. The only fun thing about it is, John, in my understanding, was that the association view is that they have, I don't know whether it's MOU or MOA, but with the national firms, you know, so why wouldn't that be good enough for other firms below them to share and that to be acknowledged?
Right, right.
Not alone.
Yeah, they may. I feel like, regardless of whether there is or isn't, I feel like Jake Daniels' concern is, regardless of what there is between the National Council and the council below them, it's just the payment of council,
right?
25%. Are we, you know, since there hasn't been any firm national settlement announced, are we comfortable signing an MOA that doesn't have any sort of clear provision about how attorney's fees are paid? And so I mean, I see what you're saying and I see what Kevin's saying, but when I talk to our attorneys, it's not, they keep telling me it's not about local national, it's about just simply the payment of national. And there's a risk in that something that is like the MOA that might be signed, which is technically a binding agreement if the threshold is met and council has the majority or the support of all the counties, then anybody that's signed on to that, I guess you get the good and the bad, you get the 85%, but then
I'll say one thing, and I would be cracked, it's probably above my pay grade already. But I think the problem, Jonathan, is national attorneys are concerned because the judgment or the award could be significantly more than anybody might even know at this point. And if they're locked into $2 billion, when they could have possibly gotten four.
Yeah, that's true.
That's what this is about, money.
Well, yeah, they've worked hard and to bring it to this point, and they need to be compensated. But gosh,
the other side is it comes in less, and they still now have an MOA, MOU saying they're going to get $2 billion, then they get more.
So, are there any statute of limitations on this?
On which part?
On the settlement part.
Well, there hasn't been a settlement, a formal settlement announced yet. So I don't.
Right. What I'm saying, do they have a time limit to make that?
Oh, you're talking about on the MOA?
Right, on
the
MOA.
Well, the only thing even resembling a time limit that I've seen is October 1. And that's from one of the members of the committee that created this document. And so even he, yesterday when I talked to him, and this is the guy that wants us to sign the MOA, said, you know, you want to consider it a little bit longer, allow something to work out. You don't have to sign it today. You got a little more time. And that's kind of what the feeling was the last time we discussed this. There's plenty of time. Why are we rushing? But I will say that with every month that passes, we're getting closer to a point where it needs to be signed. It needs to be signed. And so I'm willing to take on the responsibility of this just being on a recurring agenda And once, and I'm going to follow up, Ron, and find out. Show me, you know, I like things in writing. I mean, if there's an October 1 deadline, can you, I can ask, the person that gave me that was Gordon Watkins. I can ask Gordon.
Okay.
Show me where that is, because I like to be able, I like to be able to give my, I mean, there's so much uncertainty and gray area in this. I want to give my commissioner something solid.
Right.
Exactly. That I can tell them, okay, we've got to make a decision by this time or else it's going to be too late. And I'll get a better feel of that and I'll have some additional update on that the next time we talk.
Okay, that'd be great. One thing to watch for, John, I know you know this, but you know, not all the firms, not all the counties who have signed us, there are a few of them who are not litigants, right? Counties who are not.
Right.
We are one of those, right? And so now the, my understanding is the number's up to around 50. So once the association, and there are others coming in all the time, right? Once we get past the majority, I don't know what, again, I don't know what preponderance means. That's a legal term, I guess. But I think it may become a moot point. That because once the majority of counties have signed, then the association feels like, and the DOJ feels like, the association is the entity to represent all 100 counties, right? That we don't have to have all 100 counties sign the MOU. Once we have the preponderance of counties, then the DOJ will recognize the association having the authority to negotiate this proposed settlement, right?
Right.
So I think it's going to become a moot point before October anyway, once we have more than, you know, majority signed anyway, you know, whether we're one of those or not.
We would get the benefit. The way you see that, we would get the benefit of it.
Just like even all counties who don't sign are going to be represented under the settlement.
Right.
Whether they're in it or not.
Well, even if the ones that didn't get in on the very beginning is going to reap the benefits.
Right.
I mean, that's the same thing.
The ones that aren't actually litigants.
Yeah.
I'm going to be in the county attorneys conference half of the next 2 days, Thursday and Friday. And in talking to the folks I've talked to, including the president of the North Carolina Association of County Attorneys, she asked me, are you going to be at the meet, you know, at the Zoom meetings the next couple of days? And I said, yeah, we'll be. She said, I'm sure that's going to be discussed at the Zoom meeting. So I'll be able, I should get some more information on what other counties and other county attorneys are doing on this as well. So I can report that sounds next too.
Well, thank you. A budget amendment, and we've had a request from Commissioner Wesson for our finance director, William Robertson, to give a breakdown of the budget amendment.
Yeah, everything, William. I try to create more work for you, Chuck. I just thought it was important, you know, for my own ignorance, if nobody else's, right? Not because, you know, when I read the things, I can understand what they are, right? But sometimes I'm not sure if they're just pass-throughs, though, or if they are really, when it says positive, is that positive to our financial condition? Is it positive to our budget? Or is negative is that way? So what's the real impact of these things is what I'm looking to understand.
Okay. Well, if you don't mind, I'm going to start right down the list. Okay. The first one I have in here is, as you're aware, we do audits through the tax office with county tax service. And throughout the years, whenever they send us a bill, we usually increase the revenue and the expense so I can pay the bill. So he has received a bill last part of the year. So this is trying to increase the tax levy at the same amount as the expense so I can pay this bill. So, and I'm hoping he's getting close to the end of that cycle that he's going through, but you'd have to ask him to make sure because I'm not quite privy to that information. The next one, this actually came through HCCBG. They had received some CARES Act money that was designated for medical transport. So that's an increase to our line item, which has been put into the Council of Aging's budget for expenses. And I think she's used some of it, and I think she has until like September to use the rest of it. So that's a plus for us to get additional money. The next one, as you heard Ms. Holloman just speak about with the HAVA grant, I knew about 10,000. I did not realize the other 35 until we started talking about the equipment purchase. So she got me the paperwork, so I'm trying to get my record straight to put this in there. To go one step further, we got together, filled out the paperwork, submitted it. I've already received the money, and I need to get this put in so I can go ahead and write the check and make the first payment on the new voter equipment that we're going to purchase. The next one, the Article 46 sales tax, with the 0.5% sales tax. The quarter cent sales tax that was created this year, and we had estimated $200,000 because we weren't really sure how much we were going to get. At this point, 9 months in, I'm sitting on 214. So basically, prorating it out, I'm expecting it to be around 285. So I'm asking to increase that by 85. This is a pass through because the money is sent straight to the school system.
That's what I was concerned about, whether or not that was really.
Yeah, that's not going to be our money. Now, if it does stay under 285, I'm only seeing what we get. But if it goes above that, I'll be coming back and asking for another adjustment, depending on what the final numbers are. The next one, did not realize this until later in the year, that DSS had projected to receive rollout money, and we did not get any rollout money for this year. So I'm making this adjustment to their budget to take that money that we were anticipating getting when we first done the budget back down. They did have some money that was carried over from the previous year, but this was just additional money that we had anticipated, but we did not get. So that's basically just an adjustment to try to get my record straight. The next item also comes from rollout, and it usually is workforce employment. And if we do not use the money, the first person that gets the option to transfer it over is the CPTA, who does the transport. And I checked with her. She needed the money, so this is an entry to try to move it from workforce over to rural general transport. And then the last one, I'm proud to say, is money coming back to us. It's a FEMA reimbursement for some overtime and departmental supplies that came in near the end of the year. So basically the summary of my budget amendments.
So we got FEMA that's coming to us. That's a real increase.
Yes.
It's around $26,000,
sort of. Yeah.
And then what else? What was the other increase?
The CARES Act is additional money. That was $10,000.
Okay, that's like 36 or so.
The HAVA grant was $36,000.
So that's $72,000.
Yeah.
But the HAVA grant's going back out.
But I mean, it came in, but we're going to be spending it for purchasing the voter equipment.
I think he wants to know.
I was just the net.
What's actually going in the bank that's staying there?
Yeah, net new to us.
The FEMA is money we spent that we got reimbursed, so that's going to stay with us. The rest of it is not, there's nothing there going to happen. If we got it, we got them to spend it.
This quarter cent goes directly to the school system, regardless of the amount that it winds up being. Is that right?
Yeah.
That's how it's advertised.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that earmarked for? Does the school system do whatever they want to with
stipend? That money?
When we first were trying to get it voted on, they were going to try to do the supplemental money.
Right.
I'm not their finance officer, but I'm assuming it will be used for the supplemental pay.
That's how
we have so it'll be supplemental, but we don't know how much it's going to be. So it's, does it supplement based on how much it turns out to be, or
unless they want to add some more to it themselves? But I mean, all of the money that we get through this is supposed to go to that supplemental. Now, if they want to add more, because they got a fund balance of $1.4 million, so if they want to add more, that's up to them.
Thanks.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
So I'll take a motion to approve the budget amendment.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Discussion items. Consideration of resolution authorizing Burchett County Fire Inspector to issue permits for pyrotechnics.
Commissioners, as you all know, we have an interlocal agreement with Washington County for inspections, and this is something that was highlighted while the fire inspector was here. We received a permit for fireworks, and
general statute states that the board must provide written authority for pyrotechnics for fireworks. And so that's somewhat open to interpretation, and different counties do it differently, where they will designate someone like the fire inspector to provide that written authority, or some boards choose to see each permit application and provide the written authority. And so for us, we had not specifically or explicitly stated exactly how the board would like to see that happen. So just for making things easier and moving forward, it would be good if the board would decide, you know, we're going to designate the fire inspector to provide that written authority, or do you all prefer to have the each permit application to come to you so that you as the board can provide that written authority?
Any comments?
I would recommend designating you and let you delegate whoever you want to do that.
Okay. Okay. And I would say definitely the fire inspector, because he or she is qualified to determine if it meets the, you know, standards that that permit should be.
So as far as the board will be concerned, it's the county manager's responsibility.
Right.
He can delegate to carry that out.
Right.
And you always have the authority that if you have any concern, you can always still bring it to us.
Yes, sir.
Right.
If they're in the gray areas, just come to us.
We have a consensus. Is that good enough for you?
I think so. Okay. Attorney, forward. We talked about that.
Consensus. Yeah, I mean, so under law, it's the statute, it's the county commissioner's decision. Any delegation, I would say if you're delegating the authority, the statutory given to you, then I think it'd be better to have a vote, a clear vote that authority has been delegated to one.
I'll take a motion to approve this resolution and give county manager the authority.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. On discussion of expanding the ABC board, and we have Mr. Freeman in the room with us, so that's good. Have you had an opportunity to speak to him?
I have. Okay. Spoken with Chair Freeman, and he supports the idea of expanding the ABC board. It's currently a membership of three, and general statute does permit the Board of Commissioners to expand that board from three to five if it chooses to do so.
Okay. Is there any discussion?
What will be the cost of doing that? My question is, what will be the cost to do
that? Going to pay out extra bills.
The cost. Do you see any benefit?
The cost.
The cost. I'm sorry. The cost. I thought you said the cost.
Okay, let me take you back. The board used to be five members. Well, we closed some of the stores, went from five to one store. It was suggested that we drop the board down to three members. And the way we did it was whoever turned the thing, we just didn't feel that turn to it. We got to three members. Because, and we did it because to save money. That's the reason. Was the reason. Because if you're talking $100 a month per member. Conference once a year. Several meals. Well, speaking of cases, when we put on the drunk driving campaign and stuff like that. So the cost is not really that much. It still has a cost to it. And
you see a benefit for it.
From going from three to five.
Yes, sir.
Where we're talking about expanding, so that would be a benefit. But I really can't put the finger on it moving us forward.
And that's the right question to ask. I mean, what is the benefit, right? Yeah, the cost is, but what's the benefit, right? If there's not some absolutely strong staring in the face benefit, why would we increase it right now? I mean, if in fact we decide to expand and we go forward, then maybe that's the time to consider it. But now, it wouldn't really make any sense. It seems to be operating real well where we are.
and I don't want to bring up a separate issue, but I will. Have we resolved the issue around the financial statement?
No, sir. That is still not resolved. That's still something we need to talk with the Archer about. It's not resolved yet.
We put the county manager in contact with the auditor.
Right. Yes. Yes, we've had some discussion, but it's not resolved. William and I are going to follow up. But it's not resolved.
Yeah, we truly need to. That's money that could be in the bank for an interest, and it makes it pound. Yeah.
It's in our bank for an interest.
Yeah, do we get it? We don't get it. You get it.
As a matter of fact, last week I asked the general manager, I said, have you gave that check to the county yet? He said, well, we haven't resolved it yet. I said, well, just give them what is stated and whatever turned out, we have one of you more.
Is there any consensus or whatever that we do not want to expand at this time?
My concern would be this. What do you think, Mr. Chair? You say you want to expand the stores in the county?
Oh, you're talking to me. I'm sorry. I thought you were talking to your chair.
Oh, that's my name.
We're looking down the road to expand.
Mike, even if you expand, how will having two more board members help you?
Not very much.
I was just, to me, it would give them the opportunity to have a more diverse board. We did not want to lose Mr. Freeman from the board. He served and he's chair, but we do have someone in the wings waiting to, wanting to be on that board, and she would offer some diversity since we don't have a female. But I mean, it's whatever the pleasure of the board is.
I nominated that person back myself when we had a chance to put her on the board, and this board did not choose to do that. So we have an opportunity anytime there's an opening to put people on the board, but to add people to the board, unless there's some compelling reason to, makes no sense to me, but throwing away money. And but I would suggest, because I think that we should take a close look at the young lady who still has an interest in being on the board, has experience, would be a wonderful addition to the board, but that's a choice we make.
Can you speak in the mic, please, so that the public can hear you? Thank you.
I would like to say this. When I got on this board, we had members on this board that couldn't read the financial statement, which it was, I guess politics that put them up there. So if you decide to expand the board, please make sure they're qualified. This board deals directly with the finance of the ABC system, which in turn give the county the profit from the ABC system. So you have to be able to read the numbers.
Well, y'all seem to be doing a good job to me.
It's a burden. It's a burden on you three guys or three people. What do you think? You've been in the game a long time. We need to bring a pitch hitter or remain the same?
Right now, as you know, one of our members, he's chair of the association for the state, but his term is ending in August. So he was a big help by being the chair of that association.
Exactly.
For the county.
Right.
So he will be back locally, and if he was staying chair, yes, I would need some help. But by him not staying chair, he his term limited. He can't run anymore.
Okay.
And to address your part about being diversified, up until the time when you nominated the young lady, whoever she is, there's never been any interest from anybody about getting on this board since I've been on.
Thank you, sir. And it's not, I mean, it's something that if you feel the need later and want to come back to us and ask, I mean, we can certainly take a look at it then.
Right. That'd be right. Good.
We sort of work at your pleasure.
Thank you, sir. All right. Confirmed date for Blue Jay Recreation ribbon cut.
Commissioners, I've been speaking with Anthony Rasko, who's our maintenance director, but also a part of the Blue Jay board. And as Shirley has mentioned before, we kind of, she mentioned that putting this ribbon cutting on a Monday because the Senate wouldn't be in session so that Senator Bazemore could join us. But from my understanding, Anthony and the Blue Jay board have been in communication with Senator Bazemore, and she has requested a Saturday date. So Anthony, are you on the call so that you can share with everyone the proposed date that the board is presented?
Anthony?
If he's not on the call, I have the date.
Okay, it looks like I see his number, but he may not.
Maybe on mute.
Yeah, he could be on mute.
What date do you have?
It's the Saturday, the 21st. That's what they agreed to.
July 21st?
No, August.
Do we have a time?
Yeah, 12 to noon to 1. Well, that's proposed.
12 to 1?
Yeah, just proposed. One of the things he wanted to do is, I know that date was available on the governor's calendar too. So he said he wanted to come. So doesn't mean he's going to come, just means it's open. That's all they confirmed. It's open.
Does August 21st work for everybody? Okay. And that date was good with Senator Bazemore?
It was. All
right.
Okay. So that's August 21st at noon.
Right. Okay. And again, that's just that's tentative. I mean, that's they settled on.
Gotcha. Right. But we're agreeing to that because we're going to have to start writing some plans and moving
that's
forward.
What they want. Yeah.
So
that's what they want.
Some folks.
Yeah. Want.
Okay. August 21st.
Okay. Thank you. Discussion item number 4, confirm locations for work sessions scheduled for 8-2 and 10-4 and regular meetings for 8-16 and 10-18.
Commissioners, in the month of August, we do have a work session, as mentioned here. We have a work session scheduled for August 2nd, and then a regular meeting August 16th. And similarly, we have a work session in October and a regular meeting in October. And when this calendar or schedule was being finalized, I think we were thinking about COVID and we had not designated a location. And at a certain point, the commissioners were going out into the different communities, but we stopped it. And so the calendar shows to be determined. And so it's here so that we can designate a place, whether it be in the community, it be here in this room, wherever the board desires.
I like the work sessions being here in town, and preferably right here. I mean,
Which one is work session? The first one?
August 2nd is the work session.
And that's morning. So that's right now, right?
Right.
Yes.
Good.
And then 10-4. And it may be that we don't need.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
To have the work session.
Right.
How about the regular meetings on 8-16?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's at 6. Do we have capabilities of taking Zoom on the road with us?
Honestly, I think it kind of depends on the location, so that I would have to talk to with IT about that to make sure that we can make it happen. We can, but it does depend where we're going and the internet connection and all that stuff.
How does everybody feel about taking it on the road?
Well, we have to decide where we're going.
Well, I'll be honest. I mean, how everybody feels. I have COVID, I guess, should be a consideration, I guess. But for me, you know, our most well-attended meetings by far have been when we go on the road. It's a packed house. Because we get to discuss not only the issues of that community, but they also get to hear the concerns of the larger county that we address. I'd hate to see us not do that, but I mean, it's a board consideration. And I think most of the municipalities do have internet, but you know, if you're talking about going to places like we went, like Blue Jay and some others, I don't know, but you know, but most of the major municipalities do. We meet in their facility, generally, you know, fire station or in their community building.
You know, a thought would be open it up to these communities and ask them to invite us the times that they would like for us to have, given the schedule of our schedule meetings. And if you want us in your location for one of these meetings, we'd like to have an invitation.
Great. I think that'd be a great idea, man. A great suggestion, because you know, you don't want to really kind of bombard on people.
You don't want to impose on.
Exactly. Oh, right. Exactly. I think that's a great suggestion.
Where
right. You're welcome.
And if they invite us, maybe they won't charge us like we have had in the past. I would hate to have to pay to have a commissioner's meeting on the road. Yeah.
We should make that clear.
Yeah. So for the, I guess we do need to decide so we can publish it. The 8/16, you just want to have it here and then let him work on the 10/18? What does it say that the September meeting is going to be here?
I'm pretty sure it's here, yeah. Yeah.
August 5th is here for COVID.
Yeah. So, is everybody in agreement just to have 8/16 here and let the county manager work on the 10/18? See if anybody invites us. Yeah. Okay. Discussion of the strategic initiative line item and the maintenance of Bertie Beach.
Commissioners, I thought it was important that we discuss the strategic initiative line item in particular because the board has expressed its desire to provide matching funds for grant endeavors with Project Sparkle, as we heard from Ms. Bernhardt earlier during the meeting. So from my understanding, the strategic initiative line item, the purpose of that line item was to provide a source of funds so that when opportunities presented themselves, we would have some funds on hand for matching grants and things of that nature. So that being said, back in 2019, when we first had the beach day, we had some funds left in that line item. And so we took funds from there for beach day because those funds were available in that line item. So now it's kind of, I think that was kind of maybe an unspoken expectation is that we will continue taking the beach day funds out of that line item. Well, now we're just taking a couple of things out of that line item. And I just wanted you all to be aware that of what we are up against, I guess. And that would be planning the Riverfest that we're planning and that taking those funds out of that, in addition to any matching of funds that we have for this particular project. The expectation is, you know, if not there, then somewhere, and if not having budgeted for, then it would be fund balance.
You know, excuse me, Chairman. That's the exact reason that I wanted to hear, and I think we should hear monthly in terms of budget exceptions when there's additional money available to us on a monthly basis. That money should not just go away and disappear, right? Right? I mean, when I hear that funds not pass throughs, but dollars above what was projected for the budget, right? In cases we have that. right? In many instances. So each month, I think we should be looking at the net effect of those transfers and exceptions,
mm-hmm.
right? And if the exceptions is positive, how are those positive funds, you know, reserved, if you will, and not spent,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Because don't they give us the ability to use those funds?
Not exactly sure what funds you're talking about, but yes, if it's not a grant where the money has to go in a particular place, then the money would stay remain in that line item at the end of the fiscal year, so we'll go back in fund balance.
Well, it goes in fund balance, so it's still additional funds that can be allocated if need be, right, without affecting the status of the fund balance or the budget, right? I mean, what I'm saying is, if William gave a report and said, oh, there's an additional $18,000 as a result of these transfers this month, that money would go to the fund balance, right? If not spent in that line.
If not spent during that.
And usually they're after the fact, right? Mm-hmm. So they're generally not going to be spent in that line. So where does that $18,000 go? I know it goes to the fund balance technically, but it's new available dollars that was not budgeted, right? And was not projected to go into the fund balance. So it's available to us. It just means that we have to appropriate it where we want to. Right, absolutely. And there's nothing wrong with that because it doesn't affect where we started the year, what we agreed to in our budget or projected fund balance.
But where does it go right now? It's not going into fund balance right now.
When the year closes. But you can.
Which is next June the 30th.
No, hopefully within 2 months, I'll get the year closed.
Gotcha. And all of the stuff. Because I do have about 3 months worth of stuff that goes back in the last year, like sales tax and things like that. So it takes about 3 months by getting everything in the last year before the books actually close.
And
remember, William and Juan talked about how they thought that there would be an excess that would be carried forward, right? We don't know exactly what it is right now today. But we're going to know soon, and we believe it's going to be a fairly significant positive. Right. So when that happens, what I'm saying is we shouldn't just lose track of that. We need to make some decisions about that. Do we want it to just go forward into the fund, or do we want to reappropriate some of that for projects that we wanted to do?
And I think that's the thing we're even trying to bring up, is that money that we budgeted for, we had this idea we can use it for, like, matches. But if there is other things that you want to do when money is available, it will be time to appropriate fund balance when you get into the new year once we're in to put it back into a line item to do it.
My point exactly.
And which is great, but until we get our fund balance
Correct.
Built back up,
right. yes.
every, in my opinion, every dime we extra we get needs to go into that fund balance.
Correct. Yes. I strongly support not appropriating any fund balance anytime soon.
Right.
So that was the point number one. Point number two to discuss. During the last meeting, there was a couple commissioners mentioned us having budgeted money for beach maintenance. And I just want to address that because there is money in Anthony's budget for maintaining grass cutting, including Blue Jay and including tall glass of water, some of the fields. However, and of course, this is we're making some adjustments because this is new. The beach is being developed and going to be updated and all this. But in terms of actually budgeting money for maintaining the beach, we have not begun to do that. So moving forward, that is something for us to consider. But just having a line item in recreation or a line item in economic development or maintenance, that has not been done. So there, you know, and we are mindful that the beach does work needs to be done. We need to maintain it and make sure it's attractive for our citizens. But we have not budgeted money just for maintaining the beach.
So I saw a picture of the beach and it looked like it had been done something to
yes.
So where
yes.
did that money come from?
That money has come from some grant funds that Rob and grants that we've secured. There's a small portion that she was able to use to do that, to flood the sink and things like that.
It looked great. Small. Yeah.
Right. Very small.
What's happening with the grass cutting?
The grass cutting. That money hadn't been budgeted for that, and Anthony did not cut it. It was not, had not been cut as much as he had planned for it to be cut this past fiscal year, which is why there was some money left in that line item. But he plans to have it cut more regularly.
Are we still looking at contracting that or trying to do it ourselves? Or?
I think Anthony's goal is to try to do it in-house, with us. I think that is our, the goal, is to try to have him to do it.
Can you get a better job?
Part of the money, I think, from that beach day that we were looking at was $5,000 for using hedgehog work or something, but I think you, Chairman, you found out that the forestry had equipment that was going to look to save us somewhere around $4,000 or $5,000.
Yes, and we're going to look into that, particularly as we plan for Riverbed.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, is your recommendation to continue with Riverfest, and where is that money coming?
As of right now, that money would be coming from this strategic initiative line item, because it's not, again, it's not budgeted for anywhere else. So again, we first took it out of there because the funds were left over at the end of that 2019 year. And so we said, we'll, you know, take care of it there. But moving forward, it would be there, or else it is not budgeted for.
So is there enough money in that fund, that line item, to help with Project Sparkle and
it could be, but we really don't know. We really don't know. As Ms. Bernhardt mentioned, if we were able to secure the $500,000 grant, that would be, we have a 5% match, and that would be $25,000, which is half of it. We have 50 budgeted. However, that could be more than that grant.
But if it's a DJ grant, I mean, the first grant, there's no match for tier one.
More than likely, we probably will not get a JD grant.
Yeah, 100 jobs.
We would probably end up with a building reuse grant and a one North Carolina. That's the two that more than likely we will end up. And if we, as you mentioned, if we are fortunate enough to get up, and you want to accept the one North Carolina fund, that is for $3
we have to match with the planter. So the committee has met, I do believe.
Yes, they have.
What was, what are some of their recommendations, and what can we skim off of that list and not spend to make it work, or is there a way to make it work and keep enough money for Project Sparkle? Because
what was the original? Was it? It was 19. Was the amount correct? What was the?
That's the cost of. Well. Right. I believe it was, there were two different options. I think, yes, it was between 12 and 14,000.
So we took five off because that was in there.
Well, we don't have a commitment for that.
Let's get the commitment. That reduces that down to less. That reduces that down to less than 10,000. What are we waiting for? If they have equipment and they're willing to use, let us use equipment or do it themselves with their equipment, then that knocks off $5,000 of the cost. We're under $10,000.
Okay.
I would just hate to spend any of that fund, that line item, and not have it for Project Sparkle if we need it. I mean, it's
$10,000 is going to keep us from doing, helping to do the biggest project we've had for this county in years. It's a sad state of affairs, Berkshire County.
Well,
we can't come up with $10,000. And I would ask William, is there any place off the budget we have $10,000?
Well, I just want to go on record and say one thing. If we were to allocate fund balance,
that does not mean when we get to the end of the year, we use fund balance. because hopefully as tight as we've made the budget, we will continue to save money going forward. So even though we may allocate it to do this project or whatever, when we get to the end of the year, we may not actually use fund balance. For example, I'm expecting this year to put back into fund balance. And we did have to allocate a few things such as grant money, stuff like that, that was carryover like you were talking about earlier. So there is always going to be a allocation of fund balance. Our trouble got into years where we were allocating more than we were actually getting in, so we were using it. As long as we don't use it, I think we'll be okay. As far as finding the line item, I think it was a pretty tight budget, and it's the first part of the year. I would be very scared to go out there and say anybody's got something that they can let go of at the moment. But I just want to emphasize that if we did come up with a project such as this and we did have to allocate fund balance, I wouldn't think it would be that desperate of a hurt on us when it comes to the end of the year.
So going forward, we need to make sure that there is a line item for Bertie Beach for maintenance. And if we continue to have Beach Day, whatever that looks like, it needs to be so we don't have to have these discussions and there's no, Commissioner's report. Commissioner Robertson.
I asked a question while we're a little off that subject, but I'll ask it while we have it very good. Talk of paying county employees this beach day. I think they like a flat rate of $150 per person. Is that, y'all remember that?
You mean back in when we had it?
When we were talking about having a beach day, I think even the discussion is upcoming.
Yes. They have no, and I've been working with LaShonda and Donna about working with the committee. And at this point, that has no compensation for working beach day has been confirmed. Meaning we will, of course, pay some employees, but whether or not it has been $150, no, we have not committed to.
Well, I guess my question is whatever the flat rate is, I'm not sure we can pay a flat rate like that.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I agree.
And another part of that, Mr. Manager, I'll be willing to volunteer some of my time during that day just to help things work.
Me too. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, come
I
in.
I appreciate it.
I can park much. Might not be pretty, but I can do it. All right, so Commissioner's report, Commissioner Roberts.
I have one great announcement from the Office of Aging. They had a community day a couple weeks ago. That was really, really great, really great day for the Office of Aging. Our director done a superior job.
Good. Commissioner Atkins. Commissioner Wesson.
Just one thing. A little over 4 years ago, we talked about the possibility of trying to do teacher housing in this county, because it's an issue that was really hurting our school system and being able to keep teachers, attract and retain. We thought we had it licked 2 years ago, but we were not able to get the support of the legislature to allow us to do it under the Bertie Windsor Township Development Commission, because they felt they'd have to give that same authority to all of those commissions across the state. So we thought it was dead, but about 5 months ago, Steve, we got a call from the State Employees Credit Union saying, we still have your $2.3 million. We'd still love you to do this project. If you can get your grant back from Golden Leaf, and if you can now find the funds, community support dollars, to bridge the gap, because we know construction costs are up. So we accepted that challenge. Golden Leaf gave us more than the 240, gave us 277. We still had a gap of around $500,000. And I'm pleased to announce to the public that all three of our community support partners, the Bertie County Public Schools, the Town of Windsor, and Bertie County Local Government, have agreed to split that cost at $160,000 each. And we're now sent in all of that to State of Poise Foundation. They will meet in just a few weeks, and we fully expect to be given the nod to go ahead with construction of teacher housing. Town of Windsor provided the property, and even Golden Leaf had said to us that we could come back to them even to look for additional kind of infrastructure if needed. But the project would be extremely well funded, thanks to a lot of folks, obviously first to this board, but sticking with this, committing to it, to the school board. I've said the same thing to Chairman Dudley, and they had a unanimous vote for the town of Windsor to invest in this project. And I think it's gonna pay out dividends for this community for years and years to come. We wouldn't be able to have this completed by the upcoming school year, but I think we can look forward to having 24 two-bedroom, two-bath units available to teachers, state, local, county employees for that second 2 years down school year. So thank you.
I would just like to say, please be careful with this storm coming in. Don't take any unnecessary chances. And if there's a warning, heed the warning. If you live in low-lying areas or in a mobile home, please get out. If there's shelters available, please go to the shelter. Don't drive through high water, all those warnings that we hear every time, but we need to be reminded. So just be careful during this storm. County manager's report.
No reports for me today.
Okay. County attorney.
Yes, ma'am. I just have one thing. You saw the emails from regarding the Purdue Pharma bankruptcy. Berkshire County, we're kind of getting back into the opioid. This is a much cleaner, clearer subject than we talked about earlier. So hopefully I can get through this a little bit better for you. Purdue Pharma is, and their affiliates are one of the defendants in the opioid litigation. They had over 2,900 civil lawsuits in state and federal court against them for the marketing of OxyContin. And they declared bankruptcy, Chapter 11, to try to get protection. As part of that, they had to produce a plan of reorganization. They've done so, and it's up for vote as to whether to approve it or deny it. You've seen, I've kept you informed with emails that I've gotten from our National Opioid Council. They recommend approval of the plan. They say that it's been hammered out over a couple of years of negotiations and discussions. The basics of the plan is that it provides that the assets of Purdue, that for that corporation to be transferred to a new corporation that will be indirectly owned by the public creditors of Purdue. That's all state, local, and tribal governments. And the continued operation of that new company, and then its ultimate sale, would generate upwards of $2 billion in assets. And these operating and sales revenues then, along with certain insurance proceeds and other assets, would be combined with a contribution of $4.275 billion to be made by the members of the Sackler family. So, so you've got roughly $5 to $6 billion that's gonna be allocated among state and local governments and tribal governments from this bankruptcy. There's no clear idea yet what each county, town, state would get. That's still a result of further negotiations. But that's the general framework of what would be done. I just wanted to also share with you the only non-consenting states, like the only arguments that have come forward to say to deny this plan is that some folks wanted the Sackler family to contribute And it, originally, it was going to be $3 billion. And as a compromise, it was raised to $4.27 billion. Some say that's still not enough. All things are a compromise to some extent. Because if some plan is not approved, then you're in a much worse position. But the other thing I wanted to point out was, the only other objections were that as far as how the company would be managed, some people that are against the plan wanted like an immediate sellout of all the assets. But again, it's the folks that are advising us and that are advising us to approve the plan feel like that in the long run, it's going to be a better, more assets and more available for county and state governments through this sort of short period of operating it and then sale. So the compromise there was that the new company will be sold no later than 2024. So instead of an initial fire sale, it would be operated and then sold by 2024. So there've been some compromises back and forth. There may be some people voting against the plan. I'm sure there will be. But the plaintiff's executive committee and our national council recommend a vote of approval. And I wanted to quote one more thing. The alternative to the plan is to engage in risky, expensive, and value-destroying civil litigation that will take years to fully litigate and which will result in delayed and inequitable recoveries among potential claimants. And perhaps most importantly, even if judgments are obtained, it could take years of additional litigation to collect from those judgments, because many of the assets of the Sackler families are in various family trusts located in foreign countries. So be a lot of chasing for dollars if some sort of plan is not approved. So so I wanted to give you just sort of an overview of it. So what I need to do is, I just got a letter yesterday that I forwarded to you that said if we don't indicate any vote or approval or non-approval, they're going to take our silence as approval. I like to be more actively engaged than that. So, my advice is that we indicate approval by the deadline, which is on the 9th. And I can do that simply by sending an email to our national council at the email address they gave us.
Is there a motion?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I would support the, based on attorney's recommendation, that we proactively support and sign the agreement.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye. Aye. Thank you. We appreciate you staying on top of all this. I know it's a lot and demands a lot of your time, but we do appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Okay.
No, we appreciate you.
Sure, Ron.
Public comments. Are there any public comments, Ms. Cartwright?
Yes, Shirley, we have one from Ms. Sarah Tinker, and she stated she just wanted to once again thank the board and all staff, former and past, who worked diligently on the Library Cooperative Extension Project. The building is truly a sight to behold. Congratulations to all, and thank you to Danielle and Amber for all of the updates.
Okay, thank you, y'all. Are there any more?
No, ma'am.
Yes.
Anthony, wanted to let you know that we apologize if you didn't get off the mute. That's why you do not.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you.
And Anthony also said that we don't need to pay until the gate is too small for the lawnmower to go in to the library and the extra-courtry building,
cooperative
building. But the gate there is too small, the door gate. So, they need to upgrade that before, we sign off on everything being complete.
I forgot to mention, we did have some campers down at the beach property this weekend. We had two campers and some tent folks, I believe. So, yeah, I let the county manager know so he could handle accordingly, but we are definitely not set up for that. And I spoke to Donna, our rec supervisor, and her concern was that they would try to build a fire and it not be contained and get out of hand. So, yeah, there is interest. We just got to be prepared for them, and we're not prepared at this time.
I think Commissioner Atkins, I shared with you earlier, and Robin too, shared with Robin that we could make plenty of money.
Oh, yeah.
With those sites.
Yeah. They
ready for hookup.
From what I could tell, they were set up on the left hand side, like where the parking area is.
Just to give you an example, you know, one time we talked about whether or not we wanted to be able to use those trailers that we were using for emergency people staying in them, you know, during the tornado. We've now recouped, I think last time I counted, about 8 of them now back in our hands. So I reached out to Camping World and asked them, what does it cost to convert, because we don't have electricity down there, right, to convert those to solar. I was a little shocked at the price. They said if you didn't want to run AC, you can convert most of them for under $5,000. But if you want to have air, which we pretty much have to have, you're talking about $7,500 to $10,000 depending on the size of the trailer. Now, they did say that they give discounts to volume. So if you had several, you could knock that down. But still, it's a nice little fee. We got this free. You know, but they said could even work with us if we wanted to kind of do a rehab and anyway. But that's what you're talking about in general price.
$7,500 per site is a long ways toward making an actual camper site.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I told the guy, I said, well, you know, what if you could you? I'm not negotiating now on the book because I'm not trying to do that. But when he brought up the idea of a package deal, I says, what are you talking about? He says, well, if you've got you know, 4 or 5 up to 10, we discount accordingly. I might even be willing to throw in the rehab of the interior if you're going to do that on the AC. Something to think about.
Yeah.
All right. Yes.
Chair, just to follow up with what you were talking about as far as the fires that might happen down there, Robin yesterday had a large contingent of people from different agencies, state agencies that were here. And as we step back into the woods on the south end of it, I guess, the east side, the southeast side, sometime, I would guess within the last 3 or 4 months, someone had gone in and actually built a fire pit in the woods, and the charcoal was still in there, you can tell. So, you know, we've been wet.
Yeah.
But if it does dry up, that's a hazard waiting to happen.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, at some point, we've got to have the discussion about having paid personnel down there. Yeah.
Sure.
We just prevent such a thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. We are going into closed session, correct? Under what general section?
Just
1843-318-11A3, 5, and 6.
All right. Is there a motion to go into closed session?
So move.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Is there anybody left in the waiting room, Ms. Cartwright?
Yes, Shirley.
Can you bring them back in, please?
Yes, ma'am. Everyone is back in, Shirley.
Thank you. So we're back from closed session, and I believe Commissioner Robertson has an item he'd like to bring.
My item, Madam Chair, is that the retired county employees receive permanent pay.
Okay. So have you made a decision on that item?
So just give a little bit of background. What the dilemma has been is just making sure that, first of all, just fair and equitable, and they were not initially included because technically they are not, no longer employees of the county. However, at this particular point, we could limit it to retirees only. Otherwise, we do open it up for having other employees who have left to come back and ask for the same thing. So we can limit it to retirees only, and the cost of that would be approximately $4,500 for retirees.
And doing so, would that make it within that budget that we set?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it will. Four. Yes, sir.
So, I mean, it's your decision. I mean, we could certainly, and I'll go on record in saying that I'm for it.
Okay.
We'll
make it happen. No vote necessary. Unless you're against one.
Well, I mean, we set that budget. We set the budget for that item. Right.
We should decide that we want that to be ruled. So let's vote to make that our rule. Are there any other four that didn't work the entire time?
Yes, there is. At least there is one who only qualifies for like 1 month.
And it'd be prorated.
It's prorated. Yes, it is prorated.
Okay.
And looking at those that work from home.
People who work from
were home. Any of those four work from home, dear?
I will go back and make sure. I don't think so, but that is definitely taken into consideration. But an employee works from home majority of the month, they did not qualify for that month.
So what's the pleasure of the board?
Ryan, you want to amend your motion to include what the board make?
Yes, I made my motion that the county commissioners of Berkshire County will make the has made the decision to pay the retirees for premium pay during that while they was working the COVID, during the COVID.
We're defined as retired, not
retired.
Yes, there's a difference. Yes, sir. Yes, 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 yes.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right. That kind of takes the dilemma out of it.
Yeah, okay, right, man.
Another thing that I'm going to put you on the spot about is Council on Aging. Our senior citizens want to go back to life.
Thank you. And I'm so glad Vanita Thompson is on the line here. And William is here as well. So we have been, there's been a lot of discussion lately about expending some funds. We have until the end of the week to get those funds spent. And so a lot of time has been there. Vanita and I have had several conversations about when we will reopen citizens. And again, I was hoping to have an exact date for you all, some of you on yesterday. And I spoke with her and she had some concerns and wanted some of the seniors to who are unvaccinated to be required to wear a mask.
Well, that's under the governor's thing.
Not to be required, but encouraged.
Encouraged.
Or, okay. You know, there's a difference. So it's just a little bit more complicated. That's why I did not provide a date when I spoke to you all yesterday, followed by Cub, because we had not quite worked out whether or not we were going to put that requirement.
Can we legally?
In place. I, and you can weigh in on that. I do believe it's possible to do that, to ask someone's vaccination status. However, I had not said.
I think you'd be encouraged.
And Courtney asked me if I should ask. She should. Well, we're back in open session. I don't think Courtney's on the line. And so, well, long story short, that's why our decision has that. I'm not certain about that, Commissioner. But again, that's why our decision has not been made, so that we can work out things like that, so that we don't put something in place there and then we have more uproar about it. But again, we're planning to open the aging center soon, but things like that have not been finalized, which is why we don't have a date. I'm sorry?
Are we planning to do that? I thought I heard you say that we're looking to encourage.
That is what's in place right now. I said the director of aging has had a conversation with me and would like to see that happen. I have not confirmed whether or not that will happen.
Like to see us
unvaccinated? Yes. So again, this is why we have not, we're not open yet. And I understand that the seniors want to get back in there. I acknowledge that. I want them to get back in there too. But I want us to do it in a manner that will, first of all, be safe for everyone and not present a liability for us. And so we're planning to do it soon, but that is why it has not happened.
I hear what you're saying, but this is illegal. I mean, do we have the authority to ask a citizen if they've been vaccinated?
I don't.
If we do, then okay, we can make a part. But if they find out we do not have that authority, we already know we can encourage a person to wear a mask.
Correct.
So, I mean, all we need to ask is that legal question, right? I mean, what else is there?
Well, that has been discussed among the task force, and I have not asked Jonathan just yet, because just because we can do it doesn't mean that we would do it or should do it. So again, that's why we have not opened.
I just think our seniors have been extremely patient, and they're running out of patience because the messages are coming more frequently now. Mm-hmm. The phone calls are coming more frequently.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
If he says we do, then that's an issue for to be considered, whether we want to do it.
Correct.
But if he tells us, or legal
advice
is that we do not have that authority, then
we can't. Let's open up and let's.
To me, it's cut and dry. That's the trouble with explaining that to a citizen. You know, I've had those talks. They say to me, "Why are you making this decision?" They don't understand.
I understand.
Why every, they're not making a legal decision? It's a legal decision. Make a legal decision.
Every county around us has opened up. And they're having to go outside of the county, to have their dances and their exercise and just to be with each other. They the senior citizens have taken a hard hit during this pandemic, and they're ready to get back.
I agree.
And they're adults. Let them make the decision.
I mean,
citizens, I've heard too.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, about
what's your question, Commissioner? About not wearing masks?
Is it more staff concerned than citizens?
I don't know. But Benita, are you? Can you unmute and speak, please? Did you hear the questions from the commissioner?
I didn't hear the question. I'm sorry. I couldn't hear it.
How many of your seniors have? How many of? Can you hear me?
Yes, now I can.
Okay. How many of your seniors have expressed concerns about people not wearing masks?
Not many, because we don't see a lot of them. You know, we only see a few people that come in. So, and they don't come in to get their meals. They actually take them out to their cars. So they haven't really been saying too much about the mask itself. They just been saying, you know, they don't even come in. So they just go take their meals to the cars. So we don't see a lot of them, hardly any of them. Now we had a few to come the other day, was, you know, at the event we had, you know, saying they were ready to come back, but they didn't say anything about the mask, you know.
I don't think they're going to be concerned about it.
Yeah, I think.
But we know people that have not had a shot and said, there was a comment, one person, a couple people had called and said, a person said, I'm not going to wear a mask. I mean, he said, I'm not going to take the shot, and I'm not going to let nobody know I ain't took the shot, and I'm not wear a mask. So when you got people like that, you kind of skeptical around seniors, you know, to say that. So, you know, that's why that was my only issue. Why I was asking, is it a way to ask them to show their card or something? Because some people going to call, even though the mandate is lifted about wearing masks, especially if you had a shot, but there are people going to walk around here that haven't had a shot and still gonna walk around here with no mask, you know. But I'm willing to do it. I'm ready to get them back, you know. But I just want to make sure they're safe. That's all I was concerned about. Their safety. That's it.
Well, I think, you know, they're I think they're able to make their own decision. And if they have concerns about going into a situation where people are not wearing masks and maybe have not been vaccinated, then they would not come. But
right, exactly. Because I did check with somebody that was told me something about Martin County. See, Martin County is open yesterday, open there, especially the senior center, opened it yesterday. And their numbers, when they usually have 25, 30 people coming, they had 3 people to come back, you know, so that because they're still skeptical about coming. But they said they're going to keep for maybe another week to see how the numbers come up. If the numbers don't go up, they're going to go back to doing where they deliver, put where they do the 5-day meals at one day.
Ron, to answer your question, I mean, I'd have to research that to be sure, but I feel like I've seen some guidance in the last month that, you know, first of all, says that HIPAA, the protected health information HIPAA law, doesn't necessarily apply to everybody. Asking it, you know, it doesn't apply to everybody necessarily.
Right.
And I want to say I have seen situations where if you're just simply saying in order to gain admittance to this facility, you know, you'll have to show a vaccination card, but we're not, but your choice also is to turn around and not come in. You don't have to show us anything if you don't want to.
Right.
You just can't gain admittance. And so I'm saying I need to research it. I feel like I feel like it might.
See, I thought that had been decided. I thought there were certain instances where they said, like getting on an airplane, public transportation, in or at a hospital, that you could be required to show that you have been vaccinated or wear a mask.
I can't hear you, Commissioner West. I'm sorry.
I thought that had kind of been a settled issue that had been determined that there were some places, like an airport, you cannot get on a plane.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Some from my research, and again, I had not spoken with attorneys about it yet, but from our research and my reading, there are places who are putting things in place where you can ask someone to show the vaccination card for admittance, which
but
means
private business, right?
I don't think all of them are. I don't think all of them are private either. But again, it's something that we can look further into. But again, the HIPAA thing that does not apply. That doesn't prevent you from asking someone's vaccination status. No. So, right, because that could be.
We're definitely ready for them to come back. We just want them to be safe. We don't want people. We don't want them coming here and go out and this virus start come here and they say, well, they got it from the council on agent. You know, I got a council on agent. But, you know, because these are vulnerable seniors and I don't want to, you know, I feel real bad if something they come in and the virus just start shooting through here, you know, because they're vulnerable.
The same people have to make a decision whether they're going to go to a grocery store or go to the grocery
store.
Wherever else they is, kind of the same thing. They have to make a decision whether they want to go or not.
There are 2 issues. Not what we would decide is one issue, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the other issue is what can we legally do?
Correct.
What can we legally do?
There's a chance we can require them to show it for admittance, but in order for me to fully advise you on that, I need to research it.
Well, and do we need to do that? I mean, do we need to ask? Are other counties doing that? I mean, my friend that goes to Chowan hasn't mentioned that she had to show her vaccination card.
And I'm not sure. I asked Anita to reach out. But again, her priority has been spending these funds. So again, this is simply why we're bringing out.
Well.
And I understand it needs to happen soon.
Yes. Real soon.
Yes.
Yes.
But we want to know. We can go to all other counties in the city centers under her. So she can tell us what's going on with the problem. I mean, all of us are under
is difficult explaining to citizens why we have not made a decision, why we don't know what we are allowed to do or not allowed to do. That's the part I hate. Well, haven't explained to citizens. I can say to them, you make your own choice. They say, well, what are you allowed to do when you're not allowed? I don't know.
Well, it doesn't even matter what we're allowed to do. I mean, I don't understand why we can't just open it. If you don't want to go, don't go.
Right.
It's like the grocery store. If you don't want to go, just don't go.
That is. One citizen said, "Then you're putting me in. You know, I should be able to go there because it's open to the public, and I don't feel safe because you don't have safety precautions."
That's the same thing every other facility they go into anywhere.
Yeah, you go to the Walmart, or by the way,
grocery store, drugstore, yeah. Anything.
Miss Thompson, most seniors. Miss Thompson, most seniors had their shots versus the younger age group is what I'm seeing on the web.
Okay.
Okay. I guess you are. That's a little different situation, but 95% of the places. Public now, you don't have
to we have a big gym there that they can definitely social distance if they
get most seniors down here. They're
so. Oh, I know, I agree. And so I don't know that I'm like Greg, I don't know why we have to even ask about a record.
But we would have to do something different with that, especially exercise class, because we have about 60 people in exercise class sometime at one time. That's so we're going to have to do some. I mean, you're talking about trying to spread out 60 people, you know, so that's why I'm really cautious about those kind of things, you know. Once we come at one time and another group had 30 group had to come at another time, you know, we got to do something different because they can't all, I don't feel like they should all come at one time.
You know, the thing is, anybody that wants to wear a mask can certainly wear it.
Over in Chowan County, my friend is going up there. She's not wearing her mask because she's been vaccinated, but there are some that are, you know, still wearing their mask.
Which is probably a good idea.
And I do too.
A great job, and she's enjoying it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, that was just some suggestions that I have. I like I said, if they would open, I'm fine because I'm ready to see my seniors. But you know, I just want to make sure they were going to be okay. You know.
That's a motion. Is there a second? All in favor say aye. Aye.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't hear the motion. It was a motion to open or motion? I didn't hear what the motion was.
The motion was to open and let you do the scheduling however many you are comfortable with in there at the time. If you need to have a morning session, an afternoon session, whatever you need to do for scheduling purposes.
Okay. What date?
We did not give you the authority to ask anybody about whether or not they've been back.
Right.
Okay.
Or mandate that they wear a mask. Are you comfortable with that? That you can't ask that and you can't make somebody wear a mask? Are you comfortable
with that? Okay.
No. Yes, wait. Are you comfortable with that? Yes or no?
Let's put it away. Whatever y'all say, I'm going to do it. That's what I'm going to do.
All right.
So, and what date? So, when you say open, on what date you talking about open?
As soon as possible, ma'am.
Okay. What's the date?
Yes.
I mean, my initial research indicates that asking someone to show proof of vaccination constitutes neither protected health information under HIPAA nor disability-related information under the Americans with Disabilities Act. So HIPAA generally applies to healthcare plans and healthcare providers, not to grocery stores, other stores, and I don't necessarily think that Council on Aging would be any different. That is, if you want to ask for that, yeah. but you still, you can choose not to ask for that.
Well, the motion was not.
Yeah, to, the motion.
The motion not, was to open up.
I just want to challenge this. So somebody comes in here in this building, a public building. You're saying we can ask them if they can back. Mm-hmm. I mean, would you do that?
Yes. Yes.
Well, they don't have to answer.
True. They don't have to
answer. That's what the people all say. That's you only right.
So what's the point?
But see, you can't call like the health center and say, I want to know if John Doe's been vaccinated. Right. That's a violation of HIPAA law.
Right.
But if John Doe's been here,
whether or not I've been vaccinated.
Yeah, well, I can't make you, but I can ask you that if you have a vaccination, and you dispute this type of
you
tell
you restrict my coming in to a public building because
yeah.
I won't answer the question.
Yeah.
So if I want to ask you if you've been divorced, and you don't want to answer, you I can just restrict you. Ain't nobody. Look, that doesn't mean I think
we
had a vote.
Yeah. Okay.
But we still can still check temperatures?
Ma'am?
Can we still check temperatures?
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go for that. Do you have a consensus to go for that? And nobody else. Well, I did go into a funeral home last week and they checked my. Yeah. The same sign that we have on this door, can't we put on that door? Yeah.
Now we have temperature, we have those thermometers. We do have those.
Okay.
We have those.
All right. Get them senior citizens to exercise and then dance when their hearts away. Yay. I will tell you probably will be getting a phone call this afternoon.
I'm quite sure. I know several of them. They don't call me too.
All right. So we voted today. This is a meeting. We have voted today. So if you're, well, you need to do it as soon as possible, preferably starting tomorrow, if you can handle it.
Because we got people on buses too. So we would have to give them 48 hours to do that. That costs EPA 48 hours in advance before we can get those that come on buses and so forth. I was thinking Monday if that was possible, you know, try
that,
to get
that will work. That will work, Miss Vanita. Monday.
Okay.
That will give us something to tell the citizens that have been calling us.
Okay.
Yay. No more phone calls about that. All right. So I will take a motion to adjourn this meeting. All in favor say aye. Woohoo. Sorry, County Manager, but yeah, I'm tired of the phone calls.